Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Excellent. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Howdy do, buckaroos. It's Wednesday. Wait, hold on. Sorry. That's your bit.
Yeah.
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Return from subroutine, Brian. All right. Today, we have a couple interesting things to talk about. One of those, actually, is JCPenney's, believe it or not. JCPenney. Penney's has issued an update to yesterday's announcement that they are not taking any sort of contactless payment at all anymore. And they have come out and explained a little bit of that. And Andrew, you wrote this up yesterday. So tell us what you found yesterday.
Yeah, so yesterday we found out on Twitter, JCPenney customer support responded to someone saying that they're removing Apple Pay as an option. And they also released an update, and we're trying to figure out exactly why. What they said was they weren't ready to, like, there's a deadline for April 13th to get support this kind of tech, contactless payments for chips and other things, but they weren't ready to comply with it, so they just pulled it all away.
Yeah.
Embracing 2012 with gusto.
So I did look into a little bit of this, and part of what they are... So, first of all, they have another new CEO, for people who may not know this. They have a CEO who came in last October and is apparently trying to help turn the stores around. And
wait, is this the guy that used to be in charge? The guy that, took back over from Ron Johnson?
No, this is a woman. Her name is Jill.
Definitely a different person.
And yeah, not the same person. I may be wrong about Jill, and I apologize if I am. I don't remember. I know that one of the things that I found in looking at this was that because one of the things that we talked about earlier when we were trying to figure out what to talk about today on the show was what exact, like, they said that they would not be compliant with this system and with the magnetic stripe system that is supposed to, as of the middle of April, is the new thing, and the old ones are going to be deactivated. And so because JCPenney's system wasn't ready to comply, then they can't take any contactless payment of any kind, whether it's I hold my credit card with a chip on it up to the thing and it allows me to pay that way, or the insert the chip in the reader style, or something from your phone or your watch or what have you. And part of what that comes with is that there are, I did a little bit of digging to find this out, and it looks like there, what this is that there's been an evolution in the magstripe technology. So anything that is magnetic stripe only, which is sort of this 1.0 version of swiping a credit card or a debit card in order to use it at the register in the little device that you swipe your card through, that technology has evolved, and it's this new, more secure version of the swipe that they weren't, that Penney's wasn't able to comply with. That's what happened. And that newer technology is part of the newer machines that you see with the chip reader that also still have the stripe, that sometimes will also take the contactless payment. There's still a stripe there to swipe, but it's a slightly different technology that they're using to do that, so that the data is a little more secure. That's what's happening. So apparently Penney's was still on, like, the oldest possible evolution of magstripe, the magnetic stripe technology. So that's why they had to take everything away, is because they weren't ready to upgrade
it's
everything.
Really, like, I'm hearing like you're saying words and all I can, like, they keep getting sort of like auto translated in my head to like
A grown up in a peanut special?
No. How is JCPenney not following Sears' lead into bankruptcy?
I thought they had gone bankrupt, and even if they aren't, I don't think their business is doing very good. So maybe they can't even afford to upgrade.
Yeah, it's not like they're in the greatest of shape overall. I mean, Brian was talking about like the guy that came back to lead Penny's to profitability again or whatever, and even that person is out, and there's been a new person since October, and.
Well, and that person was the person that had, you know, led JCPenney solidly into Fuddy-Duddyville before yes. Ron Johnson. And just in case folks are wondering, one of the reasons why we're interested in JCPenney in the first place is because the person who co-invented Apple's Apple Store experience with Steve Jobs, Ron Johnson, went to JCPenney after leaving Apple in 2010, I think. Did he leave in 2011 or 2010? Because he left before Steve died.
But yeah, some time ago. And
yeah, so he goes to JCPenney and he tries to completely reinvent them, just like utterly changing the way that they sold merchandise and marketed merchandise and displayed merchandise and the mm-hmm. way the stores were organized. It was this complete and massive overhaul. And JCPenney's customers didn't all immediately embrace it and were pissy about the lack of coupons. And the board fired Ron Johnson before he could finish his vision. That's probably the biggest reason why we're talking about this today. And then the second biggest reason, of course, being that there's an Apple Pay related story.
Yes. But I would also like to point out that part of why Ron Johnson got the Apple retail gig was because he helped Target with this similar sort of overhaul, which is how he got the attention of people looking at who are movers and shakers in the retail space. So
now what he was doing at JCPenney was nothing like what he did at Target.
This was a thing under his belt.
Target.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
He resurrected Target and helped bring them into a much better position to compete with Walmart.
Right.
Because Walmart was crushing Target.
Yes. But that's what I mean. Like, he got attention because he had helped Target turn around and then went to Apple, built the Apple retail experience, the Apple stores that we all see now. Like, that all started with as part of what he worked on with Steve Jobs. And then he went to Penny's because he wanted another challenge, and he went to Penny's, and Penny's kind of hard passed on that. And here they are now taking away Apple Pay. And what I wonder, because I don't know a whole lot, like, it took me a while to even find the actual stuff that they were talking about here. I did find an article from 2015, which talks about how that was when people were starting to get cards with chips in them, and that the mag stripe was eventually going to go away because they're very easy to hack. They're very easy to read, and anybody can get that information and make it all work. And there's some interesting history behind it, but it's basically end of life in its initial form. And so having that go away was sort of interesting, because we always hear about places that are more places that are accepting Apple Pay. We accept Apple Pay now. We take it at this place or that place, or the other place. And we don't hear about a lot of people taking it away. And what I wonder in this specific case, because they've eliminated all contactless payments, is what that means for anybody that goes to that store and tries to pay with a chip card, for example. Like, will their terminal still take that? Or is it going to all have to be swipes, you know, which aren't great. And so I'm sort of curious what the impact of that is going to be, but I'm not curious enough to go shop at Penny's and find out. So and that's, you know, I sort of wonder if this is going to be just another thing that's to their detriment, or if we're going to find out that this turns around pretty rapidly because they're going to find, you know, something, you know, some way to make it reality.
The biggest takeaway here is that for me is that if companies want to stay abreast of where customers are, they need to embrace contactless payments. Mm-hmm. Contactless payments are not the majority yet here in the States. They may be close to the majority in parts of Europe. But I mean, it's going to become an ever more important part of doing business. It's why Apple is in this space in the very first place. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, Samsung is in this space because Apple's in this space, right?
Right.
But Apple's in this space because Apple sees a future where contactless payments and not using insecure credit cards is the thing to do. And so, you know, this is a huge black eye to me, for corporate black eye for JCPenney, from the standpoint of like being ready to, you know, like head into 2013.
Yeah. that's really what it is. Like they can't even embrace years that start with two. It sounds like, you know, and I feel like that would be frustrating because retail already has an uphill battle in the first place. Like, we know this because Amazon and the .com piece of anybody's physical, you know, like if you ask Target how much of their stuff is in store versus Target.com, you know, I don't know what that ratio is going to be, but I know that the online piece continues to climb all the time. And I would think, given all of the stuff that physical retail stores are up against already, you know, that it would behoove them to sort of attempt to be a little bit more current. So I will have to see if I know any Penny shoppers and ask them if this has changed anything in the stores. But I also wonder, you know, what it's going to change long term for Penny's, like you're talking about, Brian. Like their decisions seem to be not great for a company that wants to continue to be a company. So I'm really not sure what's going to happen with them. But one of the things that, like, you know, one of the other great things about contactless payments is that they're way more secure. You know, we've talked about this, and I wrote up ages ago how Apple Pay works for people, because there are people who are sort of worried about, I don't want to carry my credit cards around on my phone, because if somebody else gets my phone, they have all my credit cards. And that's really not mm-hmm. how it works. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to it. I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes to the article I wrote that talks about how Apple Pay actually works. And
article
what
you wrote? Okay.
It was about, an article I wrote about breach fatigue, because I went and dug into all of the pieces that make an Apple Pay transaction work and why that's better. And there's a bunch of reasons why it's better. And one of those reasons is that it is so unbelievably fast. And when you wave your arm at the thing and your watch goes off and you already paid, it feels a little bit like magic even still. And that's really awesome. So I will make sure that the article about Apple Pay technology is in the show notes. And now I want to talk about another thing that's going to be in the show notes. And that is Tesla and their robo-taxi plan. Now, Brian, this was something that was interesting to you, right?
Yes, indeed. So there are several aspects of the story. Tesla, Elon Musk has showed off or announced a processor that does 144 trillion, I think I got that right, 144 trillion calculations per second, claiming it is like the fastest chip like since sliced bread, to which NVIDIA says, nah, we could do 320, but you know, that's just sort of Elon Musk in a nutshell for you. The other aspect, the part that I thought was really interesting, is him saying that Tesla owners will be able to put their cars to work as robo-taxis when they wish by 2020. And ignore that time. That timeline is not going to happen. Just from a regulatory standpoint, that's not going to happen. But from a beating Uber standpoint, from a beating Uber standpoint and beating Lyft standpoint, it is a really interesting dive, pronouncement of where they're going, because this is, basically Elon Musk is going to sell you a car, let you make money on it, and then they're going to make more money on it too. And then they also had announced a couple of weeks ago, and we didn't end up talking about this, but they were going to do a thing where you can lease the low end Model 3, mm-hmm. but you can't buy it at the end of the lease because Tesla is going to take it back and use it for the same fleet of robotaxis. But in this case, ones that actually that Tesla actually owns, as opposed to you putting your own car to work. And I mean, and this is where we're headed. I mean, like that whole thing where Tim Cook talked about being at the intersection of three things in the automobile industry, which is electric cars, autonomous vehicles, and ride sharing. Mm-hmm. And Uber, certainly. Google, certainly. And Apple, probably, but not definitely. And clearly Tesla are all looking at this future where driving is done by fleets of corporate-owned self-driving vehicles. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to all own our own self-driving vehicles. We're not all going to own our cars. Okay. So I think neither of you are chiming in, but I think this is super interesting. One of the things that Engadget said is that Elon Musk is hoping that Uber and Lyft that he's hoping to beat Uber and Lyft's cost of $2 to $3 a mile with 18 cents a mile.
Wow.
With these cars. And that's part fuel cost. And that's also part human cost.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cause you don't need a person in them.
You don't need a person.
Yeah.
And this idea that I could buy a car and then turn around and make, cause he says we could make $30,000 a week. I don't own a Tesla, but that mm-hmm. Tesla owners could make up to $30,000 a year by putting their car to work. LOL. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, I tell you what, being able to make $3,000 a year or $5,000 a year or, you know, $1,000 a year is roughly $1,000 more than we make from our cars right now.
Right.
We don't make anything from our cars unless we're doing Uber and Lyft.
Exactly. Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, that's what I thought was the most interesting. There, you know, Elon Musk is saying maybe in the future Tesla owners will be able to act like an Uber driver, but you don't need a self-driving car to do this. I don't know why Tesla doesn't just create their own service. So even with people,
well, he's saying that they will.
But it, like, to me, that paragraph you shared sounded like that's only going to happen with people with self-driving Teslas.
Yes, this is all predicated on self-driving robotaxis. But there's two elements to this. There's what he said yesterday. And then there's also what he said a couple of weeks ago about the what Tesla said a couple of weeks ago about the Model 3, about like you can lease the low end one, but you can't buy it at the end of the lease because we're going to use it for our own robotaxis. So there's two different components here, but all of it is about robotaxis. It's not about you sitting in your car and driving people around. It's about the car doing the driving around while you're at work.
Oh, okay.
Or you're sleeping, or you know, you're at home making dinner or whatever. It's smart. It's super smart. The whole thing is super smart. His timeline is probably Rockersville.
Yes. And
I don't know where Rockersville is, but it's somewhere near Crazy Town.
I think so.
Yeah. And but the vision that he's got is pretty, I think, logical and doable. It's just a matter of how long it'll take. Plus this notion that like, So you lease a car out for a couple of years. The person who is leasing it basically pays for it, mm-hmm. pays for that car to be, you know, or at least most of the cost of that car, while Tesla still works out the, you know, say the reality of its own robotaxi service. And then at the end of 2 years, Tesla takes the car back. It's paid for and they get to turn around and use it as a robotaxi. It's brilliant. It's just brilliant. The whole thing is brilliant. If they can do it
as a business thing, that is a really interesting thing to watch them pull off. But as a person who owns cars and has liked owning a car and likes driving, like not sitting in traffic, I like actual driving where you get to drive and the windows are down and the radio's up and you get to go. That's great. So to me, this sounds sort of weird, but it also sounds sort of weird to me in a way that is a fundamental change, which is the, like, suppose this is a robo-taxi thing and it can happen, like, while you own the car. This is what I'm seeing is, like, at some point, for no apparent reason, the car backs out of my driveway and leaves. And that seems weird.
Well, I have also heard reports of multiple small and young humans cavorting on your lawn. And I'm curious as to what you're going to do about that, Kelly.
Well, there are a number of options.
We know, for instance, that young drivers are not getting, they're not buying cars. More young drivers are not being young drivers at all. Like, 16-year-olds aren't rushing to get their own driver's license anymore. Mm-hmm. And this is before self-driving robo-taxis are really a thing. Uber's and Lyft is a thing, fine.
Yeah.
Right? But Uber and Lyft that we know today with human beings driving you around is a stopgap change.
Yes.
We are headed to a world of corporate-owned taxi fleets, and maybe with some self-owned taxi fleets where you're contributing your car to the corporate fleet. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It is only a matter of time, and it's not a matter of much time. 5-10 years.
I didn't say I was mad about it. I just said it was weird. It seems to me weird. Just like it's weird to me to go to the Apple store and pick up an iPhone case or whatever and scan it with my phone and go, yeah, I paid, and then just leave and not have to talk to anybody. Like, I think it's weird. It takes some getting used to.
It's also weird that these kids don't understand that they need to get off your lawn. But how do they not understand that?
Well, they're going to understand it in a minute because I can run the sprinkler system from my phone.
Ooh.
There you go.
So that problem solved. No, it's just one of those things which is like a fundamental shift in how things work. Like, because I also don't understand the whole, like, I'm not in any rush to get my driver's license. Because I grew up in the wilderness before the internet and Lyft and, you know, cars, I feel like, sometimes. And you know, it was super important to have your license because then that was the only way you really get to go anywhere. Because when you live in, like, outside of town, and town is a population of a three-digit number of population, and you don't even live in town, like, yeah, it's super important to get your license because otherwise, like, what are you going to do for fun? So the whole thing about, like, I don't really care that much about getting my license, you know, like, I have many other ways to get around, is just completely foreign to me.
It's because it was a very brief period it's been a very brief period where children had agency at all. Mm-hmm. It's only been a few decades, 5 or 6 decades, probably since World War II, where children, teenagers, have had any agency whatsoever. And during that time, having a car meant the freedom to go where you wanted without your parents. Mm-hmm. And that was why it was important. And the thing is that society is shifting in that particular regard. That particular metric of freedom is not as big a deal as it was, in part because so many parents lived to take their kids where they want to go in the first place, which was not the case, Kelly, when you and I were growing up. I'm not sure.
Right? It really wasn't.
It really wasn't. Like, you know, my parents were either too busy or didn't care to take me where I wanted to go.
Right. But also, you can hang out online with people without having to go be in the same place.
Yeah. A smartphone is largely, this is just occurring to me, a smartphone is largely taking the place of a car in terms of freedom from your parents. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a huge part of what we're seeing there. And car companies that don't embrace that, and that includes Apple, if Apple is going to still get into the car business. Car companies that don't embrace that have a limited shelf life.
Agreed.
That's what I'm trying to figure out, where Apple would fit into this, because as I wrote last week, there was this report that suggests maybe instead of Apple building the car, they just want to create this self-driving sensor. So maybe would they license the sensor for
you? Yeah, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, that doesn't seem great.
No, it's not that. It's not Apple. Apple doesn't make sensors for other people to use.
Right.
That would be, and Apple doesn't really have any expertise in that sort of licensing. That really just doesn't make that story. I never bought into that story at all.
For that reason, it doesn't seem like an Apple-y thing to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apple wants to own the user experience. Why, mm-hmm. why in the heck would they make sensors? Are they going to license out sensors? I mean, come that. Yeah.
Right. Which to me is why not to completely diverge, but that's why the Apple TV makes sense, because Apple owns the experience of your television, even if as of now, they don't own the content of it.
I'm sorry. That's also another discussion.
We will hold forth on the remote in the future, but because it's terrible, and we all agree about that. But Apple owns the user experience of watching stuff through the television, even though as of now, the content that you're watching on that is all stuff that's provided by other people, whether it's HBO or Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime, even now, anyplace else. Like, Apple still owns the user experience of how you interact with all of that content, and that's where the TV makes sense. So this making a deal with other stuff, I don't see that being a thing either. But if that changes, we will absolutely let you know. And I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by to talk to us about pennies.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And
pennies with an E.
Pennies with an E. And Brian, thanks for coming by to talk to us about robotaxis.
Indeed. Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
And I appreciate the alert about the small people on my lawn. I'm going to go resolve that now. And
you need to deal with that.
I do. It's a real problem. I'm going to go take care of that. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. You can talk to us about your thoughts on robotaxis and Apple making sensors. And if you're a penny shopper and you've noticed anything different about the experience there lately, we would like to know. Swing by, leave a comment in the show notes. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, or you can email observations@macobserver.com. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.